Yes. The head raven, fashionably late. Oh, come on, Corey. You know it's going to happen one day.
Storm, fashionably late is 15 to 30 minutes late, after people have already started to arrive. I missed the party completely. I got on the bus and went downtown instead of uptown.
Yeah, that means you arrived just in time to help clean up the party.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't you a good friend?
I'll sell it as that, yes. Yeah, about that, 5 minutes that per, work. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. Plus, we got our usual questions. Plus, we got, I'm sure some kind of bullshit to discuss about the meaning of life. So this has been pretty good.
The meaning of life?
Are you recording already?
Yes.
Are you recording?
I am.
Because Storm has his recording voice.
He has his recording voice?
Yeah.
What is this recording voice? Please enlighten me.
Is this the voice that he uses when he kind of like starts to use the highs and the lows and he kind of bounces all over with his voice and he's everywhere?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Instead of just talking straight and normal, he kind of goes up and down and up and down.
Are you trying to insinuate you don't like it?
Like a roller coaster.
It's part of the package. You know, I got to get in the zone.
And now he's going to talk about his package.
It's very large.
We are there again.
We hit that point very early on this episode, apparently.
Mm.
It's okay. We will not be discussing anything rump-related today. It's all good.
Allegedly, we might. Who knows what people may be asking advice for.
That's true.
I'm so
excited.
That is our topic today. We will be doing our best to give you advice. We have a whole bunch of emails here from you guys. Thank you so much. And we're going to read them. Maybe give you some solid advice and improve your life, right? That's the intention. We're good at that.
Yeah, that's the intention.
Okay. I've got a doctorate.
Yeah, improving lives,
I've got a doctorate from Burdanian University in tripology and graphology, so I am happy to provide all of the knowledge my brain can offer.
Look at him and wearing his Burning Phoenix's jumpsuit.
And I have an actual real degree, somewhat of a degree in psychology
and pedagogic.
I don't know. Yeah, so first of all, Corey, do you have to take psychology courses for your paramedic things?
Like intro courses, not any sort of advanced courses, just kind of like, hey, this is how people are going to act when there are these situations, they're going to be, freaking out. And like my particular one, the one that I elected to go towards because, I don't know, like my particular favorite side, not favorite in any way, but the side that kind of has a calling towards me is dealing with geriatrics or older patients and, being able to empathize and kind of understand where they are in life. So I took my psychology course was in human development.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I had so many, I can't even tell you anymore. but I'm not a learned psychologist, so my advice isn't professional.
Yes, that is one thing we need to establish right off. Our advice is not professional. We are not professional advisors in any capacity. We can give you tips, tricks, but if our advice somehow fucks up your life instead of makes it better, we're innocent. We're poor little birds. We don't have a lot of money.
At your own risk. And for the record, Fleeky Fleek, I actually do have a degree, and it is in IT support services. And in order to get that degree, you actually have to take basically a very customized psychology course in how to deal with conflict resolution, how to actually get people to tell you what's going wrong rather than tell you what they think is going wrong.
And, communication.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. And how to deal with HCI or human computer interaction, which is the hardest course I've ever taken in my life. Basically, you learn why people intuitively will use software a certain way, why you can use a mouse right out of the box without reading an owner's manual. It's fascinating stuff, and it's truly an art.
So by that technicality, Storm can actually give you professional advice with information technology, but not this kind of advice. So write Storm your, you know, tech questions. Why is my mouse not interfacing with my computer?
my only real degree so far is child care worker. And I'm not sure if people asking me for questions to the children, I think I'm not sure if that are demography.
Probably not, but that's okay.
How to make a grifflet stop squawking?
Duct tape.
Duct tape, yeah.
Beaks have a very nice protrusion to them that...
Put it on the naughty step.
I was going to say, pull them against your chest and gently pet their head feathers as you coo softly. It tends to release a nice soothing tone right into their body that gets them relaxed.
Ah, yes, just the...
Exactly.
Learn to monk chant. It's fun.
Whereas for your job, Cor, you know, when it comes to dealing with irate patients, all you basically are taught to do is bust out the tranquilizer, a couple of stabs, and problem solved.
Right? Oh, we do not tranquilize, not unless they are in copious amounts of pain. Then it's a pain management medication, not tranks. We don't knock people out.
Oh, come on.
It is
boring.
For EMTs, it is up to the patient. It is the patient's responsibility to lose consciousness, not ours.
I have seen an EMT knock somebody out. It was great.
It was probably a paramedic. I think some jurisdictions may allow them to use sedatives. Definitely not ours, and definitely not as an EMT.
He was going nuts. He was trying to attack people, including the techs, and one of them stabbed him in the neck with a trank, and he fell. Knocked out pretty fast. It was awesome to watch.
Super.
Good stuff.
Yeah, no.
So
the easiest patients to deal with are the ones who have knocked themselves out in some capacity. Then you just treat whatever's happening to them and get them to the hospital.
So before we are coming to the listener's question, I have a question to you, Cor. What episode are we in today?
This is episode 42! This episode is the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
This course for you, for you, for you, for you. This
episode
for you.
Of Bird Life is brought to you by the planet Magrathea. Magrathea. Have neither of you actually read The Hitchhiker's Guide?
I only saw the movie.
You still know what Magrathea is?
It's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yes, that is Fleeks. I'm Cor.
And I am Lord Stormgriffin. Things bird.
Now he's a lord. Again, who keeps giving these people property ownership?
It's easy to assign titles when you're God. I mean, hey, come on.
He's not God. He's not. We're not. No.
I don't even know where I am.
No. If this is the direction we're going to go, we're just going to jump straight into the first email. Let me get that pulled up here. Okay, so yeah, I have our first question pulled up here. You guys ready?
I was born ready.
Oh, okay. Wow. The question has to do with relationships. The message is, it's coming up to my first year of being single since I broke up with my ex last year. I don't know myself when or if I'll be going back into a relationship again. But the two-part question I would like to ask is, how long is a good, decent enough time to stay single after you break up, after a breakup for you guys? And two is, when do you know the right time to start dating is again? So it's a two-part question, but it's kind of the same. Like, how do you, like, what do you feel that you know is kind of the right time to start getting back into the game? And when is probably the best time to start dating again?
This is a great question. It really is. It varies by person, but for me, what's worked for me the most, because let me tell you, I have had some explosive relationships in the past. You hit the ground running again. As soon as you break up, you hit the ground running again. The reason why is the best relationships in life start as friendships. So if you go out specifically looking to date someone, doesn't work that well. If you go out looking to make friends and just enjoy yourself, you'll find that you will end up bumping shoulders with people that you're like, oh, wow, this person, I can see potential in them. And potentially talking to them and nurturing that, you may find that spark you're looking for. But you're never going to find it sitting at home feeling sorry and, you know, depressed because of a terrible breakup. That's my two cents.
So can I jump in with the next one here?
Yeah.
Okay. I halfway kind of agree with that. So I disagree with the jump right back into it immediately sort of thing. But that's, again, this is a very personal thing. So two different people may not align. However, I highly, highly agree with the, you know, the best relationships start as friendships. I've tried the hookup culture, the dating, the, you know, meeting people and just jumping right into it. In fact, my current relationship would technically be kind of a, we didn't really know each other that well beforehand, so we weren't friends before, but as far as relationship goes, it's been wonderful. I disagree with the jump straight back into it because it depends on the weight of the relationship you had prior to that. Now, if you are kind of in the just dating around, you know, nothing too serious mindset, then no, that's not going to hurt you in the slightest. But if, and by the sounds of it, this was probably a more serious relationship, like, you know, you were going steady, you may need some time to recover and time after a relationship to reflect upon yourself and, you know, kind of figure out you. Maybe kind of look back in that relationship and see the points where you may have made mistakes. Don't dwell on them. Don't fall into depression over them. But learn from the mistakes you made in that previous relationship so that you don't make those mistakes again in future relationships, sort of thing. Overall, it's just all about becoming a better person for you, for your future partners.
I think it really depends on person too, because for some people, they go from one relationship to another and are happy, and other people are like they need a break, like 1 or 2 years or something between a relationship, and it depends on how you're ticking, because maybe. If I should decide between waiting a bit and jumping in another relationship, I would say wait a bit, because it depends on if you ended the relationship with the other part, or if you're like super sad about the other relationship broke up. Because if you're super sad and you're just taking one to if you're just getting into a new relationship to soothe the pain, that's not fair for the other one you're practically dating or whatever, because that can go wrong. Can go wrong, because you may not have the same feelings. You're in your heart, you want your ex, but you so this person is only the second choice or something, you know. That would be terrible.
Well, you got to understand, I guess I need to clarify my original advice. And what I meant by jump right back in is the way I view it, in that let's say you were caught your partner cheating, or they dumped you for a horrible reason and you feel awful, right? Yeah. Don't wall yourself off from the world. Still go and at least socialize with friends, baby step yourself out into life. You'll start to feel better, reflect, because I have seen it where people go the extreme and wall themselves off and take years to recover, and that's time you'll never get back.
Okay, yeah, in that sense, I completely agree as well. After a breakup, the best thing to do is to be with friends. Don't be indoors. Don't be alone. And probably, I mean, if you partake in alcohol, don't drink for a few weeks. Just throw it out for a few weeks until kind of that initial wears off, you know?
Yeah.
Good advice.
Guys, that's one down, and we probably didn't result in them dying, I hope. All right, now our next question is this is a pretty serious one, and the subject is nighttime hallucinations. The message is, about 2 or 3 nights a month, I find myself waking up in the middle of the night to a hallucination of spiders in my bed or falling into my bed, etc. I went as far as to put an object in my nightstand to knock to the floor in order to verify that waking up was actually happening and this wasn't just a repeating nightmare.
Oh. Okay, right. And what's the question?
Should they be worried, and what can they do to have fewer hallucinations in the night?
I would say if you have hallucinations in the night, I can't really tell you where this comes from. If it is like, if it's something organic that you like have those pictures because some synapses in your brain don't work right, or if it's something psychology. I mean, I would have to know, like, are you afraid of spiders per se? And the other thing could be that it is like a kind of lucid dream. I had that as I was a child myself, I often had nightmares of me laying in the bed. And then some monsters are like in my bed and I feel real pain when they touch me or stuff like that. And it went away with me getting more active or doing more positive things. So your body doesn't have time to think about stuff like that when you dream. So it's more busy with thinking of other things while you're asleep.
See, for me, you kind of touched on exactly where I'm thinking too, Fleeks. And that is that my first question for this individual would be, are you afraid of spiders? Because if you are afraid of spiders, that could sort of explain partially why you're seeing spiders when you wake up and experience these nightmares, sort of. And some people it's clowns, some people it's dogs, it just varies. But one of the things that has worked for me, because I also used to wake up with nightmares several times a month, is number one, before bed, I always give myself time to wind down by doing a mindless activity. It cannot be something on your phone. It cannot be something on the computer. It has to be like read a boring book, read a magazine article, do word puzzles, reorganize beans, just something stupidly simple that allows your brain to shut down. And then go ahead, make sure your room is comfortable, make sure you're in a bed that you can sleep comfortably on, make sure it's a little cooler at night so you sleep through the night soundly. And also try writing all your feelings down into a journal before bed, because that can allow you to fully sort of empty what's on your mind onto paper and give you a chance to fully decompress before bed. Doing those things really helped me. Obviously, if you try them and that doesn't help, you know, seeing a psychiatrist wouldn't hurt down the road if things get worse, but those things really made a difference for me.
I'm definitely on board with what they have said so far, especially you, Storm. definitely take some time to wind down and get away from electronics. You know, put your phone away probably about an hour before bed. It's kind of the standard first advice you may hear. Other things that may affect how you sleep at night would be, are you eating before bed? Because oftentimes when you're digesting and sleeping at the same time, like actively digesting, like you've just had a meal, you've gone to bed, that can cause some weird interactions as far as your brain goes, and that does cause some weird dreams in some people. Another thing to consider is medication interaction. This is definitely something to talk to your doctor about. If you are on medications and you think there's the possibility that there may be some interaction going on there, that's giving you these poor lucid dreams. Another thing to kind of ask is, are you sleep, like, even though you're having, you know, hallucinations and maybe lucid nightmares, do you wake up rested? Do you feel rested in the morning? Are you sleepy throughout the day? That may be something you may want to talk to a doctor about as well. So yeah. Watch what you eat before to go to bed, and maybe consider your medication interactions.
Good advice.
Yeah, always, if it gets really worse and if it influences your life really badly, go to a doc. He's the one, they are the ones that can help you the most.
Definitely, for sure.
And the most professional. Course.
All right, that was number two, and I think again we probably didn't horrifically suck at that advice, guys. We're almost improving people's lives here.
This is just speaking from experience here, so I mean, keep it coming.
All right, our next message comes from Regday. He says, "Hey guys, this Hooper would like to ask you all, what advice would you give anyone who would like to do more audience and crowd performances, but has massive stage fright? Any preparation tips or tricks to keep cool while talking or performing in front of or speaking live to an audience? Please tell me. I need to know. I'm a nervous Hooper. Kind regards, Regday."
I love Regday. I actually have experience with this. What about you guys?
I have... Definitely, for sure. I mean, everybody of us should have a bit of experience with that, because you all probably had presentations in school, or I myself had a band, and I'm a bit bad in giving advice at this advice on that, because I'm a kind of outgoing person, and of course you have nervous. You're nervous, but for me, you should focus on the joy of practicing what you like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not focus on the fear, not focus on the audience. Focus on I'm going out there and have fun for myself, you know? Not trying to be good, try to have fun.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, the thing that I think I mentioned this once before, I think. I have severe social anxiety, and people think that that's nuts, because when I'm at a convention or you meet me in public, I appear to be very outgoing and love to socialize with people. And the way I overcome a lot of those challenges, especially when I'm on stage, whether it's work, giving a presentation, or at a furry con doing God only knows what alcohol has influenced me to do in front of a group of people. The way I overcome that is the same. Once you go onto the stage, you aren't dealing with a crowd of 300 people, 1,000 people, however many it may be. You're dealing with a couple people. Just scan the crowd, find a face you enjoy looking at. It could remind you of someone you're happy to see, a friend, etc. And while you're performing or giving your speech, scan the crowd, but keep coming back to this person, because all you're doing is speaking to them. And for me, it makes the room seem a lot smaller, and it makes the conversation seem more personal. And by doing that, I can keep my anxiety down. Otherwise, it will consume me.
That sounds legit. That sounds like a really good advice. Do you have some mechanisms to cope with stage fright? Yeah, Core.
I do. There's a dog barking in the background, so I've kind of had myself muted. Sorry if it continues. So previously, I used to do improv, and in high school, I did a couple theater performances. And the thing is even to this day, when I'm giving presentations in front of an audience, you know, be it for college courses or whatever, I have horrific, crippling, paralyzing stage fright to the point where I forget what I'm going to talk about. I have to have like cliff notes and whatnot in front of me. And it's not the easiest thing to cope with, but there's a couple things that helped me personally. One, when I was doing theater, it was a lot easier because the lights were on you and you couldn't actually see the audience. So, I mean, you got the audience's reactions to your bits, and when you get the audience reactions, those are more relaxing than they are more petrifying. It's not like snap back into reality. There's a whole wave of people out there. It's like, okay, I did my bit, and they're laughing, and they're enjoying it. I'm doing good. So when you're on stage, I personally would count on the fact that maybe there'd be some lights to kind of obscure the audience. I think Storm's advice on kind of like focusing on one person in the audience may be pretty legit. If you can see the audience, probably my best advice in that circumstance would be to look past the audience. Find a point out past the audience, above their heads, usually kind of like the stage direction booth, which is at the very back of the auditorium or whatever, is a pretty good place to focus on. Or just something that is past the audience itself. So you're not actually looking at them, but you're still addressing the whole audience. But you yourself aren't personally looking at them, whichever makes you more comfortable in that circumstance.
Go ahead.
What also helps you is, it sounds like a cliche, but be well prepared. If you know you're well prepared, if you know that you're well prepared, you have some kind of safety line, you know what I mean?
Yep. And this is going to sound stupid, but it works. Move. If you can, if you're acting and you can't, then okay, I get that. But if you're giving a speech or telling a joke and you can, walk around. Move your hands as you talk. It will slow you down so you're not so nervous you're stumbling over words. And it helps you feel a little more relaxed.
I'm guessing in this personal circumstance here, Reg Day is probably going to be performing in front of an audience, you know, on guitar, and probably going to be on like a stool, if I'm just kind of inferring here. But he's not going to be able to move too much. But in that case, you have your guitar to focus on. You have your instruments and your singing to focus on. I think, and I can be pretty confident in saying, once you're kind of in the groove of things, everything else just washes away. But that initial walking onto stage moment is probably going to be probably one of the more intense moments of it all. When you're walking out on stage, take a big, deep breath, hold it for a second, and then just let it go. Just try to get all those like feelings out of you and just deep breath, let it go.
Yeah. Also, to prepare yourself for such things, it's also a good idea to practice in front of a mirror and pretending that you yourself are the audience, because on the other hand, everyone in the audience is practically just like you, just a human like you, and that has a kind of, for some it helps, I heard. It has some kind of psychologic effect.
Though you also have to remember, you are your own worst critic. So many of the small little mistakes you see yourself doing, the audience will not notice most of them. God's honest truth.
Yeah. People who are there to see you perform, they're there because they want to see you perform. they're not there to diminish or criticize you. They are excited to be there, and they are on your side. All right. Hopefully we're not going to mess that one up either. Good luck.
That's pretty good. What's next?
All right. We get a little philosophical with this next one here. It has to do with the certainty of reality.
Oh, jeez.
Eclipse Griffin asks,
I can't take anything.
I'm looking forward to it.
Eclipse Griffin asks, is reality static for everyone? That is to say, do we all experience the same reality, or is reality a collection of personal perceptions unique to each individual?
The latter. Scientifically proven.
Is the blue that I see the same kind of blue that you see? Would my blue be orange for you? Would it be green? I don't understand how the effects of this work.
Bottom line is perception is reality, and everyone's perception is unique unto themselves based on the environment they were raised in, as well as how their body, their brain, etc. actually functions.
Yeah. For example, I see birds everywhere.
Yeah, everybody's birds for me.
Yeah.
And I think I have the spirit of a griffin inside me, so I'm just goofy. There you go.
No, but yeah, it's true. Reality is really a fascinating thing. But you shouldn't think too much about it. Just accept your own reality and move on with it.
It's probably a combination that everybody's realities are shifting and different, but we all play on this one big surface that is static, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And even though the joke is, you know, we hear all the time, I reject your reality and substitute my own. And that would make life so much easier if everyone can see what you see. Life don't work that way. So life is essentially an agreement of compromises to keep us going in the same general direction at its best.
Yeah, yeah.
That, and but if you want to see the other planes of reality, mushrooms are your friend, my man.
Oh, God, yes.
Did you?
Don't do drugs. Don't do drugs.
Ever. We do not condone drugs on this program. Moving on.
Well, I kind of condone marijuana a little bit, but that's just personal.
I wish they would legalize it because, in all honesty, if you're going to have alcohol legal, you might as well have marijuana legal. But anyways.
Honestly, that's coming from someone who doesn't even partake. I just see the medicinal benefits of it all and the fact that it doesn't hurt anything. Why not?
Yep.
Yeah, if alcohol is legal, that's the strongest argument, because, yeah.
Well, yep. Let's not throw that under the bus, otherwise the prohibition may happen again.
The U.S. government tried, failed, we'll never go back.
All right, our last question falls under the category of relationships as well. Anonymous Lovebird has to say, I have a crush on a BirdLife host. How should I approach him?
I think most of the hosts, you can just tell it. They would be like, oh, cool.
Hopefully a little less devastating than, oh, that's cool.
Hey, everyone knows. Okay, so if you like Fleeks, naturally approach him and tell him how much from your heart you love and want to be with him, and then he will proceed to destroy it with, oh, cool. That is the most German response to a romance letter I've ever heard in my life.
To be honest with you, yeah, if by chance Fleeks is this crush, he is a very emotionally devastating person. I have tried to flirt with him, and it has only ended with nights of drinking and crying. I thought I was good at shutting people down from working in like a nightclub and everything. No, man, like, I am the Padawan to his Obi-Wan Kenobi.
but now, okay, guys, if this is the advice for Fleeks, we have to do the advice for each one of us. So what would the advice be for Core? What would the advice be for...
Well, I was going to take it in a different direction. I was going to say, well, how would you approach any crush? Like, how do you get that out in the open?
You just poke them.
stalk them in the internet, find out what they like, and then no, don't do that.
Honestly, if it's just any crush, if it's someone you truly enjoy and you actually want to have a legitimate, non-creepy relationship with them, befriend them. Say hi. Talk to them like normal. Treat them with respect. Treat them how you would want to be treated, as long as it's in a respectful way, and see where the relationship goes.
Yeah, it's
that's the best way to do it.
In the circumstance of most crushes, it is best to get to know them and pursue them in the fact of finding a friendship out of that. And then if it escalates further than that, awesome. If not, well, you have a friend.
Yeah.
Everybody's always like, the friend zone's horrible. Well, honestly, if you're pursuing them for a relationship and more than friendship in the first place, you kind of deserve the friend zone. Does that make sense?
Bingo.
Yep. Okay. That was all of the advice emails we have. Next up, I think we have listener questions. Is that right?
That's all the advice emails?
It is.
I'm just confused because I see one came in while we were talking and it actually more pernient.
Hang on one second.
It actually seemed more like a almost serious question. At least that's the way I'm reading it. But it's simple.
Oh, hey, yes. This one, it didn't pop up because Storm was reading it, so I didn't get the notification. Storm caught it before I did. All right. Then in this case, it will be our last question of the evening. And it is nest advice. What's the best way to go about getting my first nest?
Ooh. Like your own home.
It starts with a stick. You find a nice stick. You don't take it to Becky. You put it in a tree and you go find another nice stick. And then you put that stick next to that first good stick. And you just kind of keep going with that. And you build a circle out of them. And then you just kind of keep expanding on that circle. And pretty soon you have a nest built with amazing sticks.
But you should like go to lynda.com or however those tutorial sites are called and looking for how to weave or something so you have some
take a college course called Underwater Basket Weaving. Yes, this is actually a real course offered at, I think, UC Berkeley, if I remember right.
The forefront of American education. But in all seriousness, before you go and find your sticks, what you should do is figure out where you want your nest to be. And if we're being semi-serious, there's two types of nests. You can get a rental nest, where you pay an evil person money each month to borrow the nest and live there, or you can buy your nest. Most people, like myself, I rented a nest. It was a townhouse for 3 years. During that time, I stashed away money every month. And when you're in the U.S., you can get something called an FHA mortgage for first-time homebuyers, which provides you down payment assistance. Try to keep the price of your first house no more than 3 to 4 times your annual income. And then make sure you keep your debt as low as possible while still having debt. So you need to have at least 2 credit cards. You don't have to have a balance. Just show that you pay them off.
Yeah, definitely keep your balances off.
Yep. If you have a car loan, they love that. Just don't be late on it. Once again, make sure it's a reasonable payment because they don't want the total cost of all of your various debts to go over half your monthly income. So your debt-to-income ratio has to be in that guideline. Your mortgage payment itself needs to be no more than 20% of your monthly. I'm sorry if I sound like a nerd like this, but I know this topic very well.
No, it's fantastic. Keep going. So, I'm writing things down right now.
So to buy my first house, I found a $95,000 nest. I negotiated it down to $80,000. In Indiana, you can buy a house cheap. It's wonderful. I love Indiana. So another thing you're allowed to do under an FHA mortgage is you're allowed to get down payment assistance from the seller up to 6% of the value of the loan. So I was able to negotiate that when I went to close on my home, the seller would give me $3,000 to put down on the house toward the cost of closing, getting the title, doing all of the 5,000 forms of paper. And at the end of the day, between that and saving up money, I was able to get my nest. When you do an FHA mortgage, you also can put down as little as 3 to 6%, in some cases as little as 1% on the home, versus putting down your traditional 20% when you get a conventional mortgage in the U.S. You also have the choice of 15 years or 30 years for a payment. I did the 30-year plan because mortgage interest is tax deductible anyways, and you can always pay it off faster. It's up to you. The bottom line is, because there's lots of choices and it can seem overwhelming, if you remember a couple key points, you'll be great. And that's number one, you have to have credit history. So if you don't have anything, go out to a local credit union or your bank and get yourself a little credit card.
Pay it off every month. Preferably credit union. I'm going to put that out there. Hey,
some small town banks actually treat you better than a credit union because it depends on the bank. It really does.
I can see that. I personally would avoid the larger banks.
Yeah, definitely.
Avoid. Can I say it? Chase, Bank of America. Don't do them. Avoid.
Oh yes. Those two banks are might as well be the Great Satan. But myself, I love PNC Bank for my banking. They're great, but for my loans, I actually go to my credit union to get that. So. But if you get your credit card, get another credit card or get a small loan, you can go to a credit union and get a secure loan where literally you give them $1,000 and then they quote unquote loan you $1,000 and you repay your own money. And this shows on-time payment history on your credit report. And as long as you show true active trade lines for at least a year and have been working at the same job for at least a year and all the income meets the debt to income guidelines I just mentioned earlier, you can get yourself a nice little home.
And they'll give you your $1,000
back. We went really deep in buying houses, but I assume so the question was tips for getting his first nest. So
which is probably not going to be buying a house.
No. And that's very, whatever you said, Storm, that's very unrealistic in Germany. You only get houses here if you have like a really good job. And if.
Sure.
I somehow get the feeling that like America gives anyone credit. Here you need to be at least, you need to get thousands of euros a month to get even a small credit. So.
Especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, everybody got credit, everybody got a house, and then we all went to
debt. Oh my God.
It was horrible.
Well, the first time home buyers are giving a lot of leniency because you're not expected to have much in the way of resources when it's your very, very first time. And of course, it does vary where you live in the country. What I just said, good luck in California because, you know, a cheap starter house there is $500,000. But in my home state of Indiana, you can buy a house for $50,000, a single-bedroom little shack, and it's yours.
So you can before we go down this road any further, because this has all been touched on,
tips for moving in your first flat or apartment, depending on where you're living. So first of all, some countries do have some. States in the world, for example, Germany, had a thing called they refund the state refunds whatever kind of furniture you need for your first house. So you should inform yourself about support by your state if there's anything available. I don't know. I think there are a few states that don't have this. And there may be a few states that are supporting you moving to your first flat. And then try to either get cheap furniture like from IKEA. I'm a huge IKEA fan, I have to admit that. Or you're going to get secondhand furniture, for example. And for moving, you really should. If you're living in America, probably all your friends do have cars, or you have a car yourself. So just rent a car. than get some friends and get this to move. Yeah, it's cheaper than a company. Except you're really lazy, then, or your mother gives or your parents give you a lot of money to move, then just get some people doing it professionally. They get money for for getting it upstairs. But what I wanted to say is, your first flat, it would be good if it would be close to your parents' home. I speak from experience. I had my first flat practically in the neighborhood of my mother, and it really helps to learn to be on your own and to have some kind of safety net to go back to. If you're like moving like 500 kilometers away, you can get like let's say it like that. If you move out, yeah, that's a really, living on your own is a whole new experience.
Also, and keep in mind that a lot of people move out of their homes for the purpose of getting away from their parents.
yeah.
Depending on circumstances.
No, I agree. No, but, I agree with Fleeks though. I do, because
don't move. Don't move 500 miles away for your first trip unless it's, you know, call it a dormitory.
Assuming
kind of thing.
What I wanted to say was that having your first flat or apartment or house or whatever you're moving in is a whole new experience, and you have to learn living on yourself by trial and error. So try to inform yourself. But it's not only trial and error. You can also like inform yourself beforehand, because a lot of adult tasks you have to do living on your own, you do not learn it in school.
Well, maybe not in Germany. I learned, I guess I got to give credit to my school, my public school. Actually, we had a class on how to prepare for living on your own, and it was everything from budgets to furniture shopping to utility bills, how to calculate what you truly can afford, and made a massive difference.
Let's get kind of back to the basics here, because we kind of keep venturing off on like the more advanced sides of things. When you're looking for your first home, you got to consider what they're going to be looking for, as you know, if you're renting. The most common policy with renting is that they will not allow you to sign on your own. You're usually going to need a co-signer for your first apartment place. So a roommate or maybe your parents can co-sign for you. Secondary is, you know, to pay rent, you need to be making at least three times as much as your rent. So if you're renting at a place at $600 a month, you need to be making $1,800 a month. You can cut that down with roommates so that, you know, it's a little more evened out. Also, when picking roommates, don't pick your best friend to be your roommate. I know that sounds like really weird advice, but your best friend is your best friend. And when you guys are constantly exposed to each other in the circumstance of living together, chances are you'll end up kind of grinding at each other's nerves very quickly. Friends, the more casual sort of friends would probably be good to have as a roommate, because then you have more to build on than you do with the best friend, and you can kind of set boundaries a little easier without being so emotionally devastating towards each other. If you can live on your own, that might be the best option, but chances are you're going to be looking for a roommate. Don't go to Craigslist what to find a roommate, though.
Oh, God, no. God, no.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Count on friends and circles.
I agree with Core, but Storm, yeah, you can. Why are you disagreeing?
I had my one of my roommates, is my best friend. And he's been my best friend now since I was in middle school. And we got our first rental place together in 2012, and it's been nothing but fantastic. If anything, it's made our friendship even better. Yeah, I mean, it does. If you're the kind of person where you get tired of being around your best friend, then yeah, that could be an issue. But if, let's say you get your first place and it's a two-bedroom apartment, and you each have your own respective places to retreat to and shut the door and have your privacy, it makes things a lot easier to tolerate than if you're just sharing, you know, some kind of studio or apartment with zero privacy for yourselves, which is important. You know, having privacy really helps you decompress when you get home. Fleeks had really good advice, though. Yeah, if you can get your first place near some kind of support network that can help you through the initial bumps, that's great. All my furniture in my house and my rental was given to me by family, or I got it at Goodwill. I've only bought one or two things, and that's a major help. Not everyone's fortunate enough to have that, and I understand that. But yeah, if you can get secondhand furniture, that's a big savings right there.
Savers, or, you know, used, you go buy used. You can get a really nice couch if you kind of shop around, look for it, for under $100.
Yeah. Yep.
I guess the last but not least for me with this, for your first nest, is I always, you know, with money and whatnot, I always look at everything from an investment perspective. If you do live in an area where you can buy, the break-even time on buy versus renting in the U.S. and most markets is 5 years. So if you love the area you're in and you want to stay there, you're going to be money ahead in 5 years typically in most markets than you will if you keep renting. Because if you just rent forever, you'll have nothing to show for it.
That is completely true. If you end up losing your rental for whatever reason or you have to move out, you don't have anything in the as far as like, you know, what is it? Net value. Yeah. Net value. You will oftentimes find that, paying for a mortgage will be cheaper than paying rent in most places. So it's definitely something to look into, but as we alluded earlier, you're going to need to have an established credit history, and renting is definitely one way to help establish credit.
It's a good way to establish payment history, but most landlords actually don't report to your credit report. I don't know if you knew that.
I guess in some, there are places that do and there are places that don't. Typically, probably not, but some of them do offer the ability to report to your credit that you pay on time and everything. So select that option if you are going to be paying on time, which you should.
Absolutely.
I think that definitely actually does wrap it up as far as advice goes now.
Yep. That was pretty good. I like meaty topics like that.
Right? I'd like to get into that a little more often. Maybe like every episode we can have like, you know, 2 to 3 bits of advice towards the end. How's that?
Cool. I dig it.
Yeah.
So definitely continue to write us and we will do our best. That said, okay, anyways, let's jump on to the questions, the more casual questions. Should we do that?
Sure. Question is, why do I encounter so few birds on places like Furry Muck?
Holy shit, Furry Muck. Whoa.
God damn, that thing's still going?
Well, of course it's still going, but like, wow, just that was a throwback.
I am like, and
I feel like I'm 13 again.
Like 3 years ago, I was in a still existing one. Yeah, but it was really fun. It was a lot of fun for role playing purposes and stuff. So, but well, just make your own furry bird muck. Why not? I can just bird muck for you. I mean, you need a feather muck then, I assume, because, you know, fur muck, furry muck,
Yeah. Well, we get it.
I think the actual reason you don't see as many birds on furry muck, and even at large in the fandom, I mean, we're growing as a segment of the fandom that's being recognized, more art, etc. But we're still in the minority. We're still like the minority of the minority. So when you go on to roleplays, mucks, IRC chats, you will see the occasional bird, but we are very small as a percentage related to all of furry as a whole.
Yeah.
It is actually very true. It's still the majority of foxes and wolves and dragons. And
if I see another dragon again, I'm going to have to get my dragon repellent out.
And just then your husband walks in the door.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Next question comes from Eclipse Griffin. Question is, where did you get your degrees from?
As Storm said, he got his from Burdania University.
and I got
mine
my...
from the College of Winterhold.
I got my in-person degree in information technology support and administration from Ivy Tech Community College. And I'm planning on getting a bachelor's degree soon, so I will let you know. But yes, if you're referring to my Griffonic degrees, Burdania University all the way, I love their mascot. That's totally why I signed up.
That is a big selling point, not going to lie. I do not yet have my degree. Ooh, I'm still working on it in nursing. And I did initially start at a university, but I've moved back to a community college because universities are expensive as hell. And this one is 45 miles away from my home, whereas the community college is 5.
Like my childcare worker degree I got in the Further School of Education in my town or in my city. And the whole design stuff I do is self-teached. But I would like to get a degree in some design job. That would be nice, actually. And actually, I'm working on a degree as teacher in university.
Okay. Next question comes from... Feedy, you are so abirdable. Question is, I don't really need any advice. I just wanted to tell you all that I love you and that y'all are amazing. Oh, wait. Any advice, pasta or chili tomorrow? I don't know. Should I stay breezy or breezy? Flap, flap, beezy. I don't know.
I don't know what beezy is.
I think breezy sounds good and chili. So that was decided now.
You know, I concur with Fleeks, chili and breezy for the win.
Wow, okay. I say breezy, but, you know, I'm going to be the rogue man here. Go pasta. Get some fettuccine.
Why not both?
Get some fettuccine Alfredo up in there, because pasta and chili are not good together. What the hell?
You can make a kind of Arabica sauce. Why shouldn't it go together? It's like noodles are the most neutral thing. You can even eat it with vanilla sauce if you like to. And everything goes to noodles, I think. If you can tell me anything that doesn't go to noodles, I don't know what I'm doing then. But everything goes to noodles.
You know, I don't necessarily agree. But I feel like everything goes really well in tortillas. I put macaroni and cheese in a tortilla, and it was superb.
So much. About you, Cor. And I completely agree, by the way.
Do you think you could put noodles in a...
I've put spaghetti, and I just said macaroni in a burrito, in a tortilla.
Oh,
and it was delicious. And now, because I said burrito, I actually really do want to try this. I'm going to actually make some macaroni and cheese, hot dogs, bacon, wrap that in a tortilla, and then deep fry the tortilla so it is a burrito. I will report back to you.
I knew you were going
to
say deep fry. Oh, I knew it was coming.
I have
make
to.
A it's wrap it in a quesadilla. Wrap it in a quesadilla that cheeses up your experience.
Coming soon to the Bird Life Podcast Twitter, Coors Burrito. Stay tuned.
With macaroni and cheese, bacon, and hot dogs.
Sell the recipe to Taco Bell. Well.
Okay, next question comes from Oriar. The question is, what TV show should I go out and buy all the seasons of?
Breaking Bad. Or
Scrubs. Scrubs.
Oh yeah, Scrubs is a good idea. Scrubs is really good.
Probably the only good thing Zach Braff has ever done with his life. Scrubs.
I will tell you, if you want a show that's breathtakingly knock your socks off, what the fuck were they thinking, all rolled up into one burrito of a show? Westworld.
Oh God, yes. Whoa,
don't know it.
I put my volume way up loud for that. But oh my God, Westworld is amazing.
It's fucking off the charts. What? I was screaming at the TV. It's like, what the fuck?
Screw Game of Thrones. Oh. I'm sorry. I just said it. Fuck Game of Thrones. Westworld. Holy shit.
Yes.
So I assume yes. Westworld is some kind of Game of Thrones fantasy themed thing?
It's robots and cowboys in the future. Let's just go with that and we'll kind of stick with that for now. It's a
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robots, cowboys, future. Imagine what happens with AI.
And lots and lots of naughty scenes. Not for kids.
Totally. Totally. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And another, because we are a bird podcast, I also recommend Regular Show. I mean, it has a Blue Jay as main character, and it's pretty entertaining.
Between Regular Show and Adventure Time, those two shows kind of like define what a bromance is. Like, bromance is best friends, but stepped up to brohood, man.
That's a good description.
If you like, and this will be my last recommendation, because I can go on for hours about TV shows I love, but if you like prison shows or prison dramas, I love Wentworth, an Australian prison drama. Think Ooh. Orange is the New Black, but actually good. It's fucking off the chart. It really is.
I'm going to have to check it out, but I really like Orange is the New Black. So,
If you like Orange is the New Black, you'll love it. If you don't like Orange is the New Black, you'll probably still love it because they sprinkle in Australian insanity with prison drama and just like, what the fuck were they thinking? And the season finale for the most, I believe it's season 5, was one of those, oh my God, I've never been so happy to see an evil person die this poetically in my life. It was that great.
Duly noted.
A prison drama wouldn't work with a German setting because our our prisons are actually pretty nice.
Yeah, I've heard. They're like luxury accommodations compared to...
Yeah, compared to America.
Subsidized housing in America.
Even the Australian prisons shown in the show has like, you know, they've got a full kitchen in the cells and they can make coffee at any time and they got PlayStation. It's like, what the fuck?
God damn.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's effective because you're just like, well, we're just going to remove you from society, but we'll still give you internet access. I don't know. That could be bad on its own, too. But
like, internet access is available in Sweden, I think.
Revoke their internet access if they start getting weird with it.
Then they only can use it for useful things. So,
I swear, prison in Sweden isn't really prison. It's like you're staying at a Holiday Inn for a few years. It's
That said, there are some Holiday Inns that are not as nearly accommodating as prisons in the U.S. too. But that's a different story entirely. Do we have any other questions?
Oh, yes. Okay. Next question. I need to plan a romantic dinner for two with chicken as the main protein. Can you recommend any recipe ideas for someone who has poor cooking skills?
Well,
macaroni and cheese, hot dogs, bacon, deep fried in a burrito.
With chicken. And throw the chicken after it. Just put the chicken on the burrito, not uncooked.
Actually,
it will impress her.
To be honest with you, if you really are not good at cooking at all, probably don't do chicken. Like, it's not that difficult.
Actually,
if you're going to do chicken, do it in giblets. Don't do like chicken bits. Like, don't do a leg, don't do a thigh. Like, do the bits.
I kind of disagree. Chicken is pretty easy to prepare. You just make sure you buy a filet.
It's more if you fuck up, you're going to be sick. So that's why I'm saying avoid it.
Well,
that's why I have a recipe for you, yeah? You just need to, like, fry chicken in a pan, cut chicken in a pan, give a bit of honey over it, a bit of, maple syrup, and then caramelize it a bit, and then put water over it, soy sauce, and sesame. And then let it cook for...
What's it with you and sesame? Like, you like just overdo sesame everything.
Sesame, because it's an Asian dish. It's a taipan. And what I want to say is that then let it cook for an half an hour in its own juice, practically, in the water you put in. And then try it a few times, and if it doesn't taste seasoned enough, just put a bit of more soy sauce in it. And that's a super... You can't mess this up. You can't mess it up, and then cook a bit of rice to it. You can mess up the rice, theoretically, but you just get the microwave rice.
First of all, Fleeks, let me stop you right there. never tell an American you can't mess up cooking food because they will invent a way to mess up the unmessable.
It's almost like we take it as a personal challenge, even though we don't mean to. I can't fuck this up. You're telling me I can't fuck this. Oh, dude, I can fuck
case in
this up.
Point. Case in point, somehow McDonald's occasionally screws your food up, even though they have tried to take the science of screwing food up out of the picture. So, with regards back to this meal, you know, cooking something with chicken, if you have a two-sided grill like a George Foreman, that makes this so easy because you can literally just get some seasoning. I like to use like a garlic sriracha because it gives some heat with some nice flavor of the garlic on it. Rub it in, beat it in, rub it in some more, and then just set it right on the grill.
Rub it some more like your partner.
Kidding. I beat the shit out of my protein. I'm not kidding. Or if you want
beat
more
that
moist
that dinner
and
so
juicy,
hard, you should buy a dinner first as well.
Oh, for fuck's sake. What you can do also to make it easy is Walmart and whatnot. They sell pre-made sauce packs that you can literally marinate the chicken in overnight. So get the sauce packs, put the chicken in the bowl, throw it in the fridge overnight, take it out. And if you don't have one of these electric grills and you just have an oven, wrap each piece of chicken in aluminum foil and form like a little pouch so it doesn't dry out. Put it in the oven, cook it for the time appropriate for how much the chicken weighs, but go a little less on the time. For me, it's usually about 15 minutes or so for fillets like Fleet suggested. And because it's wrapped in the aluminum foil, all the moisture and juices from the chicken and the marinade stay in there, and it will taste utterly amazing.
That actually sounds really good, and I'm not going to knock on using packets from like Walmart or grocery stores at all, because some of those like marinating packets or even just like instant packets for gravies and stuff are amazing. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they know what they do. They put a lot of E621 into it, and then everything tastes good.
Sugar, spice, everything nice, and a little bit of chemical X.
All right. One final question. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
In all your travels, what is the most beautiful thing you've had to run away from? Oh, I've had to run away from a buffalo. Well, I'm sorry, a bison. I was in my car, and the bison got pissed off because people were taking pictures too close of it in Yellowstone National Park and started charging down the road. And I literally had to take my car onto the grassy shoulder and motor around him as he just about headbutted the side of my car. What about you, Cor?
I've been trying to think, and like, do you remember me talking about the Mormon crickets like way back in like episode 2 or 3? Showing you a picture of those things?
Huh?
I would have to say probably those. Like, they're really weirdly cool looking in, like, a really sort of beautiful way. But they bite. So, technically, by not getting out of my car and just still continuing to plow through them, I was running away from very beautiful things.
That concludes our question.
I think that about does it. Do we have anything else we want to talk about?
No.
Okay.
We talked about so many different stuff today. No, we earned a break.
We earned a break. Fleeks wants to go to bed.
I actually want to draw.
Ah, okie dokie.
I just want to go ahead and give a shout out to all of our listeners that are in the hurricane affected areas. If you can help and donate to these individuals, they've been through a lot. Please reach out and to a charity of your choice affecting them. I personally know people that have lost everything in these hurricanes, and it's a devastating time to lose your entire livelihood and start over, so anything you can do to help would be appreciated.
It's true. It's absolutely absurd the way we've had 3 hurricanes going now.
Holy yeah, shit. That was really crazy. I'm only looking at this from the distance, and I think even most Americans looking at it from a distance, because America is huge, I learned. But still, it's crazy. I mean, I can't believe how much of my friends living down in in Florida or close to Florida were affected.
So yeah. Anything you can do to help would help. And, you know, I've lived in an area that's been destroyed before by natural disasters, flooding and tornadoes. And I know what it's like to, in that time of need, have the charities come in and have just, you know, my fellow citizens come in and help my community. Makes this country great.
Do you have any recommendations of a good organization to donate to if we have that availability?
Yes, not the Red Cross. I'm serious. Not the Red Cross. If you want to truly help the most, go online. Facebook has a lot of various charities making petitions out. Google the area you want to support, and there's various news organizations, etc., that will pop up with local charities in that area. There also is Charity Finder websites online you can use. A lot of the animal shelters, for example, are truly destroyed and need every penny they can get. And so if you're an animal lover, that could be a way you help out through that. And just, you know, make your money count. If you can volunteer to go down, do that too. Just anything you can do to help. Just not the Red Cross. Don't get me started.
I don't know. Understandable completely. We'll talk to you about it later, Flix. Don't worry. All right.
Also, the same goes for all the flute victims in Texas. That was also a thing.
Texas, Florida, the whole southern United States, the islands.
Oh, yeah,
there
was a hurricane too, right?
Yes. From what I understand, like some of the islands like Cuba and them have experienced absolute devastation. Like 98% of their infrastructure is just gone.
Mm.
And unusable at this point.
Yeah, pretty much the Florida Keys are just... they're lucky the islands still exist, but all the infrastructure doesn't exist.
And somehow the highway itself is still up. If it is, I don't know, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Happy note to end it on, but... Hey, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, via the RSS feed. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, or Telegram, t.me/birdlifepodcast, or no, just birdlife. And yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Remember, always be beeping.
Always be beeping.
Always be chirping.
Storm.
Good night, man.
No, beeping. Hey.
'Semi-important. So the storm guy, what do you think about that?
He's fine. He's okay.
Yeah. I'm only okay to you. Really?
he listened.
42 fucking episodes in and I'm only okay. Oh my god.
And if Gordon Ramsay says that, for example, that's very good. So just imagine Corey's Gordon Ramsay.
If Gordon Ramsay says your food is not total shit, that's a compliment.
Yeah.